From Interfaith Alliance, this is State of Belief. State of Belief can be heard across the country weekends on Air America Radio. The program and this podcast are made possible by Interfaith Alliance and its members. For more information on Interfaith Alliance and its work promoting faith and freedom throughout America, visit interfaithalliance.org. And while you're there, please consider supporting State of Belief and this free podcast service by making a tax-deductible donation to Interfaith Alliance Foundation. We need your help to keep State of Belief on the air. Thank you for listening.
Air America Radio and the Interfaith Alliance Foundation present State of Belief, Religion and Radio Done Differently. Here's your host, the Reverend Welton Gaddy.
Welcome, everyone. This is State of Belief. I'm Reverend Welton Gaddy, president of the Interfaith Alliance, broadcasting this week from the Center for American Progress studio in Washington, D.C. On today's show, religion becomes a fear tactic in the election once again. It wasn't bad enough, these insidious emails attempting to smear, and I put smear in quotation marks, Senator Obama by calling him a Muslim. Now we have this video called Obsession, a documentary of sorts that tries to link Islam to the Nazi Party. And watch out if you live in a swing state. The DVD could be arriving in your morning paper if it hasn't already arrived. We'll get to that story shortly. Plus, how do young Muslim Americans feel today about national security, about religious freedom, about the Iraq War, about themselves? We'll find out when we speak with the author of a new book on being young and Arab in America. And a story that's taking religious liberty to new heights, literally. We'll speak with the first female pilot from the Sikh tradition. She'll tell us how she got her employers to accommodate her religious beliefs. But we're not quite ready for takeoff just yet. Because first, we want to get an update on the presidential election from our resident State of Belief political expert. Greg LaBelle is an assistant professor at George Washington University. He's a veteran of the presidential campaigns of former U.S. Senator Gary Hart, Vice President Al Gore Jr., and Governor Howard Dean. And Greg joins me now in the studio once again. Greg, great to see you again.
It's great to be back, Welton.
Where in the world are we in this campaign?
I guess, as the old saying goes, we're at the first day of the rest of our lives. This has been this entire campaign season, as we know, it's been just a series of twists and turns that I certainly don't remember the likes of in my consciousness of politics. And here we are yet again. The Wall Street meltdown has once again, I think, redefined the race. We are talking only about that. Both of the candidates, I think, are trying to continue to move their messages in the context of what's going on on Wall Street and in the Congress at the end of last week and today. And this is driving the thing right now.
Oh, gosh, Greg, you're surely not one of those Joe Sixpack guys, but I just want to talk a minute about the vice presidential debates. Can you do that?
You betcha.
I don't mean to make fun, but I will tell you, that was one of the strangest debates of political nature to talk about statesmanship that I've ever seen.
It was unique. I do think we saw a record set in vice presidential debates in winks to the audience. But I think, you know, I think that Governor Palin had a task to do, and to a large extent, she did it well. Governor Palin was really debating herself. She was debating the Sarah Palin of the Katie Couric interviews and so on and so forth. And in that sense, she did a credible job. She presented herself as more together. There were no deer in the headlights moments. And so in that sense, it was that was helpful. But in terms of the content of the debate, I don't think there's any question. I mean, this was facts versus platitudes, to a large extent.
Reading the various commentaries on the vice presidential debate, one thing that is really obvious to me is that this makes even more important the presidential debates. And what's happening there? I mean, the first one was somewhat blah. Where do you see that going?
You know, the first one is interesting because of the way different folks have perceived it. Again, I think the Washington chattering class sort of called it a tie. But again, if you look at the polls, the numbers show that Senator Obama actually benefited a great deal. The other thing I thought that was interesting was there was a lot of criticism here in Washington about Senator Obama, the number of times he told John McCain that he was right. Again, the polls show that Americans find that very attractive. It is sort of putting your money or your mouth where your money is, maybe, in terms of this bipartisanship that both candidates are trying to preach right now. But I think that Obama showed that. Obama, to some extent, I think in the first debate, was really doing the same thing Palin was. He was sort of debating against himself. He had to prove his competence in the field of foreign policy, and he did that. The next debate and the next two debates really are going to be closely watched by those remaining folks who are undecided.
We've heard a lot about religious identity politics in this election. We usually ask, in fact, you and I have talked about where will evangelicals go, where will the Catholics go. Has this economic crisis just trumped all of that?
To some extent, yes. I think that's true. But again, I think the presence of Sarah Palin continues to bring those so-called values issues back to the table. And she does it in a really interesting way, and I think disturbing way, as far as I'm concerned. Because if you listen to Governor Palin talk about issues like abortion and marriage and so on and so forth, she always talks about them in a personal sense. I would counsel somebody to do the following. I have a friend who's gay. The real question is not what Sarah Palin personally feels about these things. The question is, what would she do as someone in a position of power in public policy around these issues? She's not telling us that. I suspect that it's done intentionally, and it's done to let the base know that I'm okay on this stuff with you guys. But it's done in a way that's not threatening to those independent undecided voters.
Greg, I'm sad to even ask this question, but there still are a lot of pointers that indicate race is going to play a major role in this election. Do you agree with that?
I could not agree more, and it's the big unknown. In my business, it's what we refer to as the Bradley factor.
What's that mean?
Bradley, when he ran for mayor of Los Angeles, clearly the polls were not reflecting some of the realities. And it also played out in the Virginia gubernatorial race a few years ago with Doug Wilder. All the polls showed Governor Wilder winning by huge numbers, but in fact, he only squeaked through. There seems to be a tendency among American voters, when asked about this issue by pollsters, to sort of mask the reality. They don't want to say, I'm not voting for this guy because he's black. And the reality is that when they go into the privacy of the voting booth, that's exactly what the decision is. So, you know, and I friends of mine have said that, who know a lot more than I do about this, that this could be good for 3 to 5 points in the results. It's our inability to really understand what that impact
and there's
be.
Nothing to do about that.
There's nothing to do
I mean
about
that
it.
Is a given yeah. that we just yeah. have to see as yeah. As a factor yeah. Yeah. that's a move.
I think that what the Obama campaign has done brilliantly to offset that is changing the nature of the electorate. These hundreds of thousands of young and minority voters and first time voters that the Obama campaign has brought into the process, their job now is to make sure that they have a strong ground game and that those people are showing up at the polls.
Do we need to look for any surprise in the next few weeks?
Probably.
Do you not have
only,
any idea
only
what it will be?
Because there have been so many. Well, I think the next big question is what's going on in Alaska, the legislative review of the Palin's decision as governor to fire the commissioner of state police or whatever his title is. I think that's an interesting thing that the judge just decided last night that legislative investigation can go on. Beyond that, who knows? I mean, it's just been that kind of year.
Greg LaBelle is an assistant professor at George Washington University. He worked on the presidential campaigns of former U.S. Senator Gary Hart, Vice President Al Gore Jr., and Governor Howard Dean. And he is a good friend of State of Belief He has helped us immensely each time here, this one included. Greg, thank you.
It's always a pleasure, Welton. Thanks.
Coming up on State of Belief, a mosque in Ohio comes under attack after a controversial anti-Muslim film is distributed by the local paper. We've got more on that story when we come back. Stay tuned. Welcome back to State of Belief. I'm Welton Getty. A recent poll from the Pew Research Center reports that about 12% of American voters still believe wrongly that Barack Obama is a Muslim. The misconception traces back to a now infamous email campaign questioning the senator's religious background. And now, in the bizarre story that is religion in the 2008 campaign, comes the video called Obsession, Radical Islam's War Against the West. Have you heard about this video? This controversial film portrays young Muslims being encouraged to become suicide bombers, scenes of which are interspersed with footage of Nazis. And now, about 2 weeks ago, DVDs of this video begin showing up in local papers around the country, mostly in swing states like Pennsylvania and Florida. You think that's a coincidence? Now, this is not to say that the video Obsession and the email campaign targeting Senator Obama are related in any integral or explicit way, but both are simply the worst examples of fear tactics in an election season. And friends, the effects can be horrific. Late last week in Dayton, Ohio, two men reportedly sprayed a chemical irritant into a local mosque, injuring a young woman. Many believe the attack was spurred on by the distribution of the Obsession video in the Dayton paper. Now, I'm joined right now by author Chris Rotta. Chris is the Senior Research Director for the Military Religious Freedom Foundation. She's been tracking the story of the Obsession video for the blog Talk to Action, and she's written on the issue for the Huffington Post. Chris, welcome to State of Belief.
Hi, thank you for having me on.
Well, the so-called Clarion Fund obviously is distributing these 28 million copies of this hate piece. What do you know about them?
Well, now, they're very, very shady is how people are describing them. And even the address on the DVD, I went doing it backwards, Googled the address, okay? This is also the address of a wedding photographer and other businesses, the whole list of them, that it's not a real address. There are others out there working on making all these connections of who Clarion Fund is connected to and backed by and all that, and it's getting more and more mysterious rather than less.
Well, listen, I realize our audience for State of Belief is hearing you say this is a kind of a shady group, or it looks like it is, so they must be thinking, how does this get into the mainstream? And the fact is, the video is being distributed via local papers, newspapers,
right,
specifically in swing states.
Well, yeah, and also through the mail. And it's 28 million copies have been distributed. We're not talking a few thousand or whatever. We're talking 28 million. And there's also good evidence that they're targeting people from the voter rolls.